No.
Yes, we're on Chof Beis, Omid Beis. Okay. All right. Let's keep our finger on the place, because, again, it's always good to take a look at the Mishnah, which, again, is being quoted over here, so that we get a better idea. So if we turn back to your test. Okay. All right. Where we have the Mishnah at that particular point. And if you remember, it says over there that, you know, we've had a whole series of disasters that if, you know, something appears or something threatens, then in that particular case, our sages declared that you should fast, they proclaim the fast.
Mm-hmm.
Or Masriyan is the word that they often use. And by Masriyan, you know, it means the Shvai, it can mean they should pray, right, hold special prayers. It can mean even that maybe it's blowing the shofar. We'll see that there's somewhat a difference of opinion about that. And also, you know, to proclaim a fast in order to avert the evil that has occurred. So now, the Mishnah continues and it says that Maaseh is a story about Maaseh sheyodos kedem Yerushalayim
over here.
There's a story. Yeah, well, this is the Mishnah.
No,
the entire Mishnah.
Is it the Yotes?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yotes of right. Aleph.
There's a story told in the Mishnah that the elders went down from Yerushalayim to the various cities. The gozutani salshinirikanol pitaner shidavon bihashkelon, and they proclaimed that there should be a fast because there appeared about the fullness of the mouth of an oven blast or mildew, whatever you want to call it, in Ashkelon. Okay, so what do we see? We see over here that you know, even though they were in Yerushalayim, but nevertheless they felt it was important enough to proclaim a fast because of the threat to the food, you know, to the fact that the grain was in danger of being spoiled, and even though it happened in Ashkelon, but nevertheless, you know, they felt it was important enough to do it. Because there's a question, you know, whether in your own locality is one thing, but do you do it, you know, do you proclaim fast for problems that occur elsewhere? And we saw that it would depend upon what the circumstances are. In some cases, yes, in some cases, no, not necessarily. All right, so that was what the Mishnah had to say at that particular point. And now the Gemara expands upon that, okay? Ebolo, the question was raised, okay? Kimlo tanur tevua o dimo kimlo tanur pas. When it says, you know, that there was shidofon, that there was this blast, you know, that occurred that spoiled the grain, did it mean when it says, you know, like a stove full, did it mean like a stove that was full of grain? Kimlo tanur tevua. Oh, dumo, maybe it means only kimlo tanur pas, you know, a stove which is full of bread. In other words, enough grain to make
bread.
The bread over there. Or, as I say, the alternative would mean that, you know, you could simply keep on stuffing grain into it. Now, obviously, which would represent a greater amount?
The grain,
because, right, I mean, you can stuff a lot more grain into it, so, you know, that would mean that there would be a greater measure of grain that would have to be affected before they would decide that, you know, this is a danger and you have to proclaim a fast, as compared to simply, you know, stuffing the oven with bread, which would take a lesser amount of grain. Okay, so that's what the question is.
The size of the ovens.
Yeah, of course, but we're talking about, you know, the type of oven that they were used to in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that they necessarily had ranges, you know, like what we had. Okay, Toshma. So, in answer to the question, you know, that was raised, who implies, you know, the question was raised. So, Toshma, come and listen. In other words, we have a quotation from another source, you know, which will tell us, give us the possible answer. Okay. So it says, Kimlo Pitanur, the Baraisa says that it is, you know, the amount that would fill the mouth of an oven. But that's it. That's all it says. In other words, what? We still don't have an answer. Does it mean grain? Or does it mean
bread?
So then he says, what dying to boil a hole? And the question still remains, he says, Kikisui de tanura, o dimlo kidora de rifto, de hodale lefumin tatura. He says, the question still remains, because we don't know, does it mean as much as it would cover the top of the stove, or perhaps it means that you would stack up the pieces of bread in the oven and it reaches the mouth of the oven. The difference would be as follows. If you take the first one, you know, that enough to fill the mouth, then in that case that would not be a very great amount, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can cover it, you know, with pieces of bread and fartik, but you know, it would not take that many loaves of bread in order to cover it. But if, on the other hand, you're talking about stacking up the loaves of bread, then, as Rashi seems to imply, in those days, the custom was that they would bake their bread by sticking dough on the side of the oven inside, and then, you know, the dough would form loaves of bread, okay? So, if you would stack them up, does it mean, like, let's say, from the bottom of the oven right up to the top? Then, obviously, that's going to be a larger amount, you know, than just enough loaves to cover the bread. But what do you notice? You notice that the implication in either case is what? Is it grain?
Or is it bread?
Or is it bread? Yeah. Obviously, it has to be bread.
I'm puzzled about the oven itself. Is this an oven which it's a top loader, or is it in the side?
No, it's a top loader.
So that means you reach down into it. And
yeah,
you put,
right.
So, and it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So one alternative is enough to cover the opening.
Yeah,
oven,
right, oven's, exactly.
Oven's mouth.
Pitada, right? The mouth of the oven,
right, okay,
which is the opening
okay.
to it, right? Yeah. So obviously that would be, you know, a smaller amount.
And the other is whatever.
The other one is a bigger one, right?
Cubic footage.
Correct.
So what they're trying here to determine is the amount of grain that
the
would
amount
the
of grain, exactly. You know, how much damage would have to be done to the crop of grain before, you know, it represents a danger.
You know, they're trying to determine what the amount of damage was, how much grain was damaged in Eshkelon at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right,
but either
right.
measurement is a very tiny measurement.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out, you know, how much damage, you know, so to know whether this is a disaster for which Masriyim, right,
which you have to
proclaim a fast, etc., as Gozru Tadis, it says, right? The Mishnah that we read just a few moments ago.
No, I understand.
Ago. Right.
Thinking,
yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to waste your time.
Yeah.
But just thinking that it has to be very much less than a single roll of a single field.
Correct.
And this would create or trigger a...
Obviously, the implication would be, you know, that it could spread. You know, it's an indication of a disease, you know, that is going to affect... more areas.
On the other hand, we don't know how big the oven is. It could have been a public oven.
All right, obviously it wasn't
the
big.
Itself, the amount of grain that now you cannot create into the bread.
Right.
That would be the grain in the field, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but we're not measuring that.
We're
trying to figure out, you know.
I thought that was sort of the tie-in, because then you say, well, you've got a lot of grain, so much required that you can't bring that much grain in, then you're not talking about the oven.
Yeah.
What does Rashi say about the size?
All right, let's take a look at the Rashi. That's what I want to do right now. Okay.
All right. Translated into
Okay. The Rashi begins with the words Ibolu. You see where it says, first of all, Shom on the side over there?
Shom, yeah.
Cherub Shel Shalom, right? As we discussed last week, you know, that it means that armies go in, but they're peaceful armies. And then, okay. Now, one line down.
In the margin.
Right? It says Ibolu. Go down from the side over there where they have the citations, okay?
Yeah.
You see the word Shom, a little word Shom over there? All right. It starts from Iboyeluhu, okay. On the left side, you see Memvav Kof Moed Katan.
You're too low.
One line above over there, Iboyeluhu. You see that? Okay. All right. Iboyeluhu. You know, this is the question was raised, right? Kimlo Tanra Tvua. You know, what do we mean by an oven full of grain? The Hainu Shir Godol Yosir Mimlo Tanra Pas. because this would be a much larger measure than simply an oven which is full of bread, right? The shir katonhu, because this is a smaller amount, okay? She'ein derech l'malos kol chalal ha'tanur pas, because it's not the custom to fill the entire area, that is, you know, the hollow area of the stove with bread. Elo bitfanus madbikinusov, but rather they just put the bread, that is the dough, and so on, they put it on the side so that it clings to the side. This is the way they baked bread in those days. But it didn't mean that, you know, they simply filled up the entire area. So they therefore would have to require a smaller amount of grain. But the question, you know, was unresolved. Which did we mean? So he says, Toshma, come and listen. I have the katane, because we have, you know, a source where we learned chado. First of all, ki hai lishna, in accordance with this language or this expression, kim lo pi hatanu, right? We had, you know, that it's as much as would fill the top or of the oven, the hainu pas. It has to be bread, he says. So we have to be talking about bread. The ilu tvua lo motzikai bal pi hatanu, because grain cannot stand, you know, like on top of the stove. It's going to fall in, right? Oh, Dilma, or perhaps, he says, Kidora de Rifta, right? In other words, like a row of loaves of bread, he says, Shura Shalech, and he explains it in Hebrew, you know. Hadvukin ze esazed, which are clinging one to another, Bafi hatanur, in the mouth of the oven. Inami, also, Shemad bikin ze lamalam ze ati hatanur. Or, you know, it could also mean that, you know, they simply put one loaf of bread on top of another, until it reaches the mouth of the oven. But at any rate, what is the final word? The final word, as you remember, was teiko. Question was not really resolved.
Oh.
Okay, that's what teiko means. In other words, the shaila still remains. There's no answer to that. Okay.
What have we got on the right side here, opposite Rashi?
This?
Yeah.
This is what we call Tosfos.
And what's it telling us here? Because the first word is...
Alright, so Tosfos discussed the same thing. Right? Do we mean like an oven full of grain? Or Dilmor, perhaps, Kimelo Tanur Pas, an oven which is filled with bread. And he explains, Kimelo Tanur Tavua, Heve Perush, that when it says, you know, like an oven full of grain, then the explanation would be, Kimelo Chalal HaTanur Tavua, would mean that the entire space within the oven is filled with grain. The Hainu Yoser, which therefore has to be more in quantity, of course, Mimelo Tanur Pas. Okay? You know, the simply filling the oven with bread. So Toshma, therefore, come in here, that Kimlo Pitanur Pas. So this teaches us that at least they're talking about what? About bread and not grain. Yim Kain, my river pasta. Therefore, it shows us that they're talking about that. Okay? But it says, "Vadain to boil lechol kimlo pitanur, kimlo kimole ogul pitanur." He says, but we still have not resolved the question as to whether by the mouth of the oven we mean, you know, the circle which represents, you know, in other words, they made the mouth of the oven in a circle. But as we said on top, right? The hainu shura shalechem svivos pitanur. Do we mean a row of bread which surrounds the mouth of the oven? Odilmor, perhaps, kidora de rifto, v'adara le'lefum, tanura shuro shuro shalechem. Or maybe we're talking about the fact that they stack bread, row upon row of bread, zula mala mezu, one above the other, ad pi atanu, until they reach the... So we don't know whether it simply means a smaller amount, namely, bread simply surrounding the opening to the oven, or do we mean, you know, stacking it up, which obviously would represent a larger amount? So we don't know.
So the question
still remains as far as the quantity is concerned. We know we're not talking about grain, we're talking about
bread.
What is necessary for bread, but still we don't know how much bread would be required for us to declare that this is a disaster area. Okay?
And we still have no idea about the size of the oven.
No, but the average oven was not big. I mean, this I can assure you.
Not to belabor this, but when they say stacking the bread, do they mean one row of stacking right below the hole, or do they mean stacking, as you described, stacking the bread from the sides And so there's several.
From what I understand from Tosfos, Rashi means putting one loaf on top of the other, I assume.
How many staffs do you
have? Well, this I don't know. It doesn't mention how many.
It has to be several to fill the oven's mouth.
Right.
So it can't be just one column going
Because the
other one stresses the mouth of the oven. That's one opinion. And the other one really stresses the quantity that the oven can contain until it reaches the mouth of the oven. You understand?
Right. It would be considerable more.
Right, which would be more.
So
therefore this is why it remains taker. We don't know exactly what is the quantity.
A cylinder or a circle.
But obviously, if the Rabbanan, who came and they declared, that they should proclaim a public fast, they must have been very much concerned, about what was happening. All right. Then the Mishnah continues. And it says, V'yod gozu tanis al she'ochlu ze'evim. Again, if we go back to your test, we have to complete the text over there of the Mishnah.
Yeah.
That the Chachomim also, right, that these Canaan, that they also proclaimed a public fast, al she'ochlu ze'evim shtein dinokos be'vayardi, because wolves ate two children on the other side of the Jordan, right?
Right.
Then it continues with Rabbi Yosi, lo al she'ochlu el al she'niru. He says, no, the emphasis is not because wolves ate, but because wolves appeared. In other words, that in itself already was serious, right, according to Rabbi Yosi. All right, so getting back over here.
Day or night,
right.
So forth, yes.
All right, so now they go into a greater story. About this. Omar Ula. So Ula said, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadok, in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadok, he said, Maaseh, there's a story, Uvolu Ze'evim Shnei Tinokos, that the wolves came and they swallowed two children. This time doesn't say that they ate them, but it's obvious, that they not only, taught them, but that they actually devoured them, and they ate them up. And then what happened? The Hikiyum Derech Beis Hora'i. And then they literally vomited them out through the yanus. In other words, they came out.
Okay.
And then when the Chachomim, heard about this deed, so the question is, what happens at this particular place? And so the answer is that they said the tiarus habosar, they declared that the flesh was tahor. The timus hatsamos, and they proclaimed that the bones were unclean. All right, now of course, what are we talking about over here? Talking about the following situation. First of all, let's take a look at the Rashi. All right? Naturally, it follows immediately after what we just read. So the first one is uvlo'on, the last word over there. And it says, they swallowed them kishahen shleimim, while the children were whole. In other words, they swallowed them like alive. Okay?
Big wolves.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a big wolf, right? So these are, I guess, they were probably, two very tiny children. I don't know. But they swallowed them whole. And eventually, they excreted
the
remains. So the question is, what should they say? Should they say that the flesh is tahor, in which case if a person comes in contact with it, he is not automatically tameh? Or should they say that if you come in contact with this flesh, it's going to make you tameh? Because the normal rule is, that a mess makes you tameh. Okay? Yes.
I was just having difficulty. The flesh presumably was digested.
Right,
and
exactly.
So it didn't resemble flesh at all.
No.
But
it was digested, right.
Okay, so they couldn't discriminate between the human flesh anyway and other flesh.
This is correct.
The bones they could determine.
Right. All right, so as I said, they were swallowed, whole. So then the sages came, the tiarus habosa, right, and they proclaimed that the flesh itself was tahor, she'enu metame, tumasmes, that it would not create, it would not cause the uncleanliness that as a result of contact with the dead. Dinis akel, because it was digested, right? Dinis batel, and so the flesh became like non-flesh, Understand? Toch meyod in the intestines. Uchegon sheshohu yemei ikol. And of course, we're talking about where several days have passed until, you know, the digestive process had taken place. And in that case, ofir shall be almohu, so that whatever they excreted was simply like anything which is excreted, but it's not something which is going to cause tumah by contact, because it's not tumas mes. However, the timo es hatzomos, but they declared that the bones, they were metame. Why? Because this is what she says, the lo nisakul, because these bones, they were not, digested. The bones remain as bones. So that anybody who came in contact with the bones, even after the bones had been excreted, you understand? Yeah, so he would come tummy if he would touch it.
So presumably you'd bury the bones in this case.
Yes, absolutely.
But you wouldn't try to consider, you wouldn't consider burying the excrement.
Right. Yeah. David?
I'm just trying to get some answer from the Hebrew. It's the hitakel. It's like a reflexive. That's
correct.
Not a normal thing to digest. Is it le'akel?
Le'akel is to digest. The hitakel
so
needs to be
really
digested.
So here it's really where it's almost lost. It's because it's been, as David was saying, it's been, I don't know how you'd say, compressed or... destroyed or pulverized.
Yeah, right. I mean, as it went through the stomach and then the intestines and everything else and so on. So the flesh itself lost its character of being.
Lost its character.
Right. That's exactly what happened. Okay. Not a very pretty story, but.
Why do they bring it up at this time?
They bring it up because of the reference, you know, that wolves ate. But in this case, the wolves didn't eat.
They swallowed
them. They swallowed them, actually. They swallowed them whole. Yeah.
Yeah, presumably, somewhere else, they're going to learn about whether you bury bones and what happens in the
Yeah, area. Well, bones have to be buried.
Yeah, but I'm saying probably they bring it up because they were learning it somewhere else.
Yeah. All right. Then the Mishnah continues, and it says, Alei Lamasu and again, let's get back to our original quotation. On your test. Okay. It says Alela Masriin b'Shabbos. But these you have to be Masri. You have to have special prayers and everything else, even on the Sabbath. Al Yirshay Kifuho Nochrim, right? If it's a city surrounded by Goyim who are threatening it, right? O Nohor, or a river which is overflowing and threatening, right? Or the Al Hasfina Amin Torefis Bayom, or for a ship which is floundering in the ocean, all right? And then Rabbi Yossi demurs a little, and he says, "The Ezra v'lo l'tzoka. On Shabbos, you're permitted to go to help them, to rescue them, to help them, but to not, you know, to have a special prayer on Shabbos for them." So he feels that Shabbos should not, should not be desecrated by having, special prayers on their behalf, because this is, it's not in the spirit of Shabbos. But Shimon HaTimni Omer. He says, Apala Dever. It says, even for Dever. Dever, of course, is pestilence, so that should happen. Then you should also, have special prayers, let's say, on Shabbos and so on. But below Hodelo Chachamim. But the sages did not agree with him. All right, so now get back to our text over here. On Chof Beis on the days. Okay. Yeah. Alei L'Masriin B'Shabbos. All right. So Tana Rabban, the first thing that they discuss, okay, they bring in, a Beraisa, which talks about, sages taught us that, Ir Shekifu Nochrim, a city which was surrounded by Goyish armies, O Nohor, or rivers, we had already said, the Echad, and likewise, this is the only way I can translate the word v'yechad over here, because it doesn't mean and one. Or if you wish, if you want, have the idea of one. And another item, or something like that, right? So, spina mitarefes bayom, right? A ship which is floundering in the sea. The echad, or another case, yochad shenir dafim nein dafim, this was not mentioned before. If there's an individual, even, who is being pursued by goyim, or mipnei lisdom is being pursued by dangerous robbers, or mipnei ruach ro, or if a person is being pursued by an evil spirit, We'll see what Rashi has to say about that. So, al kulan, for any one of these cases, yochid rashai lisagavis atzmei v'tanis, an individual is permitted to afflict himself by fasting. All right. And Rabbi Yossi Yomer, but Rabbi Yossi, who demurred before, says, Eina yochid rasha lisagavis atzmei v'tanis, he says an individual must not afflict himself with a fast. Shema yitzarach labios, because if he starts into fast, then by virtue of the fact that he's not out there earning a living, so he's going to have to come to public charity. In other words, he'll need people to give him handouts, right? The yena bias mirachmon salav, and people will not feel sorry for him because they'll say, look, he brought it upon himself by fasting.
By fasting.
He told him to fast.
Yeah.
Right? So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So Amar Yehuda said in the name of Rav, he says, my time is Rabbi Yossi. What is Rabbi Yossi's reason? He says, Dichsiv, the Pasuk says, Vayehi ha'odom l'nefesh chaya. Man, or Adam if you wish, but man became a living soul. Right? So he says, Neshama, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave you a neshama, shenasati b'cho, you know, which I have given to you, hachayeha. You have to keep this soul alive. Don't, start to take chances, you know, which will shorten your life. Okay? So you have to try to preserve it to the best of your ability.
So we're talking about one person who decides to fast,
yes,
if the city is surrounded by Gentiles.
Right. I'm not talking about a public fast at this particular moment, but talking about the individual.
And
you're absolutely right.
The individual who's hallucinating, that the evil spirit, whatever it
right,
is.
Right.
It's not he who's fasting, but someone who's fasting because they're sympathetic to his plight.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. Okay. In other words, that somebody shouldn't, simply do that. Okay.
Because it wouldn't be his fault if he was affected by the evil spirit himself.
Yeah, all right. So now we come, this evil spirit. Okay, Rashi continues over there. Okay. Mipnei Rachro, you see it?
Yeah.
He says, Shenichnas bo Rach Shedo, that the spirit of, like a devil or a mazik, has entered into him. The rots, and he runs, Oleich, and he keeps on going, keeps on running. So why do we have to pray on his behalf? So the answer is Veshema Yit Baba Nohar. Maybe he'll drown in the river, he's trying to get away from the evil spirit. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's afflicted with Mishagas, so he's liable to drown in the river, or Yipol, or he'll fall, and suffer a fall, the illness, and then he'll die. Alright, so then it says the Sagev, so he translates, what is the meaning of the word the Sagev? It translates, it means the Anos Nefesh. In other words, to afflict his soul, through fasting. So Metargeminin, the expression of Anos Nefesh, that we find in connection with Yom Kippur, for example. So the Targum is the Sagpo Nefesh. So from this we know that the word the Sagef in Aramaic is the equivalent of to afflict. Okay? Now, what happens if the guy decides to fast, and Rabbi Yossi is opposed to it? He says, Yitzorich Labrios. He will eventually have to come to other people. Because he no longer has any strength to go and to earn a living. Well, there's panes b'yigio, and to be able to support himself from his work. And, as a result, people say, look, who asked you to do this, We're not obliged, to take care of you simply because you prefer to fast or something like that. And Dechsev, as the Pasuk says, the Nefesh Chaya, alright, well, he's only quoting again. That means, keep that spirit, keep that neshama alive. Okay. Vaita. Shimon HaTimni, as we said, Omer, he says, Afala Deva, that even for pestilence he should. So the question is, Hiboilahu. Question was raised. Lo Hodulo Hachomim Bishabos, Aval Bechol Hodulo, Odim Valoy Hodulo Klal. Question is, when it says that the Chachomim disagreed with Shimon HaTimni, does it mean that lo hodu lo chachum b'shabbos, that they disagree with him only as far as Shabbos is concerned, that is, fasting or proclaiming a fast on Shabbos, or but it would be okay if it were a weekday, aval b'chol hodu lo, right? But in other words, they agreed that if it is a weekday, then certainly you could proclaim a fast, for pestilence. O Dilma, or perhaps the Hodolo Klal. Maybe they disagree with him completely. So, Toshma, so again, they bring a Baraiso from which we can find out the answer. The Tanya. We've learned that Masri and Al Adever Bishabos, Ve'en Sochtom Bachol. There is a statement that says that you are permitted to have, to be Masriya for pestilence on Shabbos, but, and it's not even necessary to add, you know, that on weekdays it certainly is permissible. Rab Chonon ben Pitom, Talmidish of Rabbi Akiva, who was, however, a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, so he says, Mishum Rabbi Akiva, in the name of Rabbi Akiva, he said, Omer, Ein Masriyin al Hadever Kol Ikor. We do not proclaim any special prayers for Dever at all. All right. Now, there are a couple of problems that we have over here. Remember, one of the problems is, as far as how do we define the word Masriyin. And we saw there are at least two different ideas. One is that you have special services with Shkait, Gevald, and everything else. The other one says that you have to blow Shofar. After all, the word, you know, Masriya reminds us of the word Trua.
Yeah.
So, are we allowed to blow Shofar on Shabbos? Obviously not. Well, we're not talking about in the Beis HaMikdash, it was a different story. In the Beis HaMikdash on Rosh Hashanah, of course they blew Shofar over there. But that was only the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't mean that outside of the Beis HaMikdash it was permissible. Okay? I'm not going into all machlokes. I mean, some say that in Yerushalayim it was permissible, but outside of Yerushalayim it wasn't permissible. Mm-hmm. Others say only in the Beis HaMikdash it was permissible, but not outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. You mentioned Yom Kippur. That's only in the year of Jubilee that they blew shofar.
Okay.
When we blow shofar, let's say Yom Kippur is on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Okay? And when we blow shofar,
the reason is
at that point, you know, Yom Kippur is technically over,
mm-hmm.
so it's permissible to blow at that point. Okay.
Oh, you mean after? Sorry, after.
After, right?
You say Shema Yisrael.
Yeah. But you know, prior to that, we wouldn't be permitted to do it. Okay. All right. So, at any rate. All right, getting back over here. So we say we don't know. What is it? Are we permitted to be Masriya on Shabbos or not? Are we permitted to do it on the weekday or not? Are we permitted to do it on the weekday but not on Shabbos? If we say that Masriya involves blowing shofar, then obviously it could only be done on weekdays.
Week.
Right. Which would be permissible, but not on Shabbos, okay?
I'm having trouble with what we mean by deva, by pestilence. I mean, we're not talking about the plague where someone dies, because we've already covered that, haven't we? If three people die in three days. I mean, that's not deva.
Yeah.
That is deva?
Yeah, it could be deva, sure. Yeah.
Didn't we cover all this?
Well, obviously there was still a question raised in the minds of some of the Chachomim, you know, as to whether it's permissible on Shabbos. That's the question.
Can you explain why it was brought up here instead of there? I mean, I know, but I mean...
No, the connection would be because of the fact about, since they mentioned other things, that you are permitted to be Masriya on Shabbos, such as a city which has been surrounded by Goy Shamis, you know, that is being threatened by Goyim, right? Let's say the Nazis are surrounding the Jewish community. Can the Jewish community proclaim a fast? Or can the Jewish community at least hold special services, you know, in order to avert the decree? The answer would be yes, okay? Or, you know, the river threatens to overwhelm the town, something like that, as we've seen, you know, time and again.
Yeah.
Not newsreels. So in that particular case, you know, it would be permissible, okay, to have special prayers. But the question is still, you know, about the role of Shabbos. Is the role of Shabbos diminished as a result of these special prayers, and therefore it would not be in accordance with the keeping of Shabbos?
Well,
and then the next question is simply this. Why did Rabbi Akiva oppose altogether having any special prayers in connection with Dever, okay, with the pestilence? Yeah.
No, I mean, we're talking about whether we should try on Shabbos.
Right.
Take it for granted that we could do it during a week.
Right.
So there's no question about the week.
Well, So why did Hashem not give?
Why did they quote Rabbi Akiva as
saying that he's opposed to it altogether, whether it's a weekday or whether it's Shabbos? You understand?
Then it must be the reason being Dever.
You mean that he's minimizing the importance of Dever?
Right.
But that's not really the reason.
Because he's not contradicting Hakafamiha Sava.
Yeah, you mean that the Goyish armies are surrounding the town or something like that.
And Shitafon, he's not contradicting this either.
Right.
Just Dever.
Correct. All right. At any rate, getting back over here, I have to say that eventually what they say is that the determination is, first of all, that Bachol Hodolo, there's no question that the majority of the rabbis would be in agreement that on weekdays they are permitted to do it. Okay?
Yeah.
Question is only about Shabbos. So that comes again to the question, why did Rabbi Akiva say that you're not allowed to do it at all, either on Shabbos? The answer is that with him it's a gezerah. In other words, it's a decree that he made because he was afraid that Shabbos would become desecrated,
right.
And as a result, he did not want to encourage the idea in general of having special prayers in connection with Devon. That was Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Okay? This is how Rashi explains it. He says it's a gezerah. It's a decree, and that's all there is to it. Okay? All right. Now,
far be it from me to view a great figure like Rabbi Akiva, who's a real hero to our people.
Right. Okay.
But
turn off the machine.
What did you say, David?
I said, turn off the machine.
But I don't understand why he could not make the same distinction and making an exception, a patur, for this for Shabbat. In other words, why could he not say, in effect, you could say it better than I can, that you can have a ta'anit on Yom Tov, Halov, for Shabbat.
Uh-huh.
Would not that have been the deen?
I'm sorry, would you repeat that? Yeah.
Well,
saying why didn't Rabbi Akiva say that you could have the ta'anit on Shabbos, but not on Shabbos.
He disagrees altogether.
He says he doesn't do it at all.
Yes, I know, but you're saying that the reason, unless I misunderstood, the reason that he had a complete prohibition was because he wanted a siyak ha-Torah. He wanted to protect Shabbat.
Yeah, correct.
And in that way, he prohibited from being done
even during
the
weekday,
I say, why was this necessary? Where he could have easily, as the Chachamim did, said that it was permissible to have a ta'anit and the on Yom Kol, and then say, but not on Shabbat. Shabbat.
Do you have Rabbeinu Gershom in your text? You have it, I know.
We have it here.
Okay. Take a look at Rabbeinu Gershom. He adds just two words.
Oh, here's Rabbeinu Gershom.
And maybe the two words will explain.
Okay, good.
Okay?
Where are we?
All right, it says, they must be in klal. You see the last line over there on the right?
Right.
We do not, do it at all, according to Rabbi Akiva, right?
Right.
Afilu bechol.
Right.
Even if it is a weekday.
Right.
Bizman sheyeshno b'mokom acher. I think it's b'mokom acher is the way it has to be read.
Makom.
Right. Yeah. As long as this pestilence is occurring someplace else. In other words,
it
looks like echad, but that doesn't make.
Maybe it's echad.
If it's someplace definite, okay. But that's why I think that the reading should really be mokamachir, because the meat that makes difference. If it's occurring someplace else, so in that case, we would say then don't make any special services for it, okay? Even during the week. Because, you don't want to go against Rabbi Akiva, who is opposed to it, okay? But if it's going to affect you directly,
then what?
Then in that particular case, then the chol definitely is permitted, but Shabbos, we have the reservation against it, okay? Yeah, I know it looks like Echad. In my book, too, it looks the same way. But to me, it doesn't quite make sense. Whereas if I would read it as Acher rather than Echad, then it's going to make sense to me. That, by virtue of the fact that it's some distance from the immediate locality, so in that case, this is why we don't have to, indulge, in this kind of fasting. Because it's not going to affect us immediately. But as I say, this is only a kvetch on my part. I don't guarantee that, it makes...
It may
not be right.
But
okay.
Under that, what happens to the zakanim who go from Yerushalayim to Ashkelon and declare ta'ani?
Okay.
They would fail under this rule.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But the answer is that they apparently felt that the threat was so great that it would affect them personally too. And that's the reason why they proclaimed the fast.
Okay. Now, if you take that, then where do you draw the line? All right.
It's a good question.
You
have to assess the gravity.
Can include the distance from Yerushalayim to Ashkelon.
Yeah, right.
Where do you draw the line? This is a very...
The answer is you have to assess the danger. Right.
And the impact on the area that you're in.
Yeah.
Well, if the pestilence is going to affect, was it three men in a city of 50?
Yeah, right. We said
that's one thing. But if it's going to affect the crops, it affects the whole country. Every single person.
Sure.
The crops is much more.
It could. It could spread. It's no question.
The pestilence is three people in.
Yeah. Well, this is why on the Ashidophone, they took very seriously. Yeah. All right. At any rate, let us continue over here.
Okay.
All right. The Mishnah then continues. I'll call Tzorah Shleitovo Alatziva. For any Tzorah, and may it not happen, which may befall a congregation. So, of course, you have to proclaim fast and everything else. So, Tana Rabbanan, sages thought, I'll call Tzorah Shleitovo Alatziva Masriyan Oleho. You have to make, the special services and fasting and so on. Chutz Meirov Geshamim. The only time that you would not do it is if you have an abundance of rain. It keeps on raining and raining and raining. So my tamo, for what reason? So Rabbi Yochanan said, "Lefi sheim ispalin al rov hatova," says because it's not right to pray that there should be a cessation of something which essentially, brings good. The Yom Rabbi Yochanan further said. Says Minayin Shem Spaladin Arov HaTova. How do we know? Where is there a source in the Bible? In other words, that we know that we should not, have prayers to God that they should stop an abundance of goodness to us. Shenemar, the pasuk says. Pasuk says in Malachi. It says, "Of you as Kol Maaser Beisoway." So he says, "Bring all your tithes into the storage house." And then it says, "Konuni no bazois, test me with this. Lo, eftach lochem arubos hashemayim. Surely I will open up the windows of the heaven to you." In other words, I will give you, plenty of rain, right? And then it says, "Vaharikosi lochem brocha ad belidoy, and I shall pour out upon you blessing until." You say, Shengenuk, okay? Well, actually, you won't even say that, because you'll be so overwhelmed by the goodness of God. So from this, we see that we should not be ungrateful to God by asking Him to put a stop, to rain, which essentially, brings, the growth of crops and is helpful to us in various ways.
You wouldn't think so in the south of Florida.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. So, Omar Rabin Bar Rav Yud, so the son of Rav Rud, said, Ad sheyivlus b'sofseichem lo madai. He explains first, you know, Bracha ad b'lidai. What is ad b'lidai? So he says, Ad sheyivlus until your lips will become weary. Literally, they'll waste away. They'll become weary from saying enough. In other words, there'll be so much that, you know, you keep it saying gedug, right? So I'm a Rabbi Barabiyot. Of Agola, but when it comes to the Gola, to the diaspora, meaning particularly, of course, Babylonia, Babel, Masrinolel, there it is permitted to say to the Beit Shalom, please, Shengadug Regan, you know, it's enough, stop the rain of it, okay? Tanya Nami Hochi, we've likewise learned that Shono Sheg Shomeho Merubin, a year in which the rain is very, very plentiful. So Anshe Mishmor, the people, you know, who are members of the Kohanim, whose turn it is, you know, to pray, so Shochan the Anshe Mahmud, so they say to the laymen who have been delegated, you know, to represent their area in the Beis HaMikdash service and also at home to have special services. Chechem Shabagola, pay attention for the welfare of your brethren who are in the diaspora in Babylonia, as I said, Shelo yehei botehem kivrehem, so that their houses shall not turn into their graves. Why this? Because obviously it's based on the geography of Babylonia. Babylonia, as you know, lies primarily in a valley, right? Bika, as we say, in the valley, which has one great river system on one side and another great river system on the other, you know, the Tigris and the Euphrates, right? Mm-hmm. And because it's crisscrossed, with, in those days particularly, they had all kinds of little canals crisscrossing it and everything else. If there should be too much rain, they're going to get flooded. And since the houses were not built of stone, because they weren't in a mountainous area, but instead, what did they do? They made bricks. So the bricks would melt because of excessive rain. So this is the reason why they said, pray for them, and this is the reason then why the sages said that in Babylonia it is permitted, you know, to pray for that rain should rain stop under these circumstances.
Now, that much? I'm just curious, it rained that much in Babel? I mean, it's a hot climate and they have those two great rivers.
Yeah, well, in Mar Cheshvan, the rains fall over there. Sure. Yeah. We know from the story of the flood, you know, when did the flood start? Also, it started in the month of Cheshvan, according to our sages, as they interpret it. It says Bakhredish Hasheni, you know. The question is only, what does Bakhredish Hasheni mean? Yeah. Does it mean from Tishrei or does it mean from this? But Rashi comment is that the prevailing view is that it's from Cheshvan, and that is from Tishrei, which would be the month of Cheshvan, when rains begin falling in Babylonia. Okay? So at any rate, Shaul is Rabbi Eliezer. So the question was asked to Rabbi Eliezer, Ad heicham yishomim yodim yispalalu shol yodim? Tell me, to what level should rain fall that the time comes to pray that the rain should not come? So Amar lahem, so he said to them, Kidei sheyamod odom mekeren ofel, the yishach sheikh raglo b'mayim. He says, only when it reaches that point where man stands in Keren Othel, which, as the sages tell us, it's a place which is high and precipitous, in other words, you're up on a high spot, and if the water should get so high that you can dangle your feet in the water, so then you know that the Shengudok, okay?
That's pretty tall.
Right. In other words, what is the implication? According to Rabbi Eliezer, we should never pray that rain should stop. Okay. The Hor Tanya, they say, but didn't we learn that there's another verse which says Yod Viraglo, right? In other words, his hands and his feet. So he says Ki Yod Kamina, okay? Or the Hor Tanya Yod maybe. So he says, Raglav Kiyodokamin is probably a better way to read it, all right? Didn't we learn that not, you know, that he should dangle his feet, but he should dangle his hands? So they say, look, he can dangle, if he can dangle his feet, he can dangle his hands also. But at any rate, there's no question, you know, that as far as Rabbi Eliezer is concerned, it's impossible. Rashi explains.
This goes through the Kova as well as Eretz Yisrael.
Well, he's really talking about Eretz Yisrael. That's where we have a different, you know, we said in the Golda it's permitted. But,
okay, okay. Eretz Yisrael. Okay.
But in Eretz Yisrael, obviously, it's prohibited.
Okay.
He says, Karen Orfield, he says, Shein Sela Gavua, the Kachshma. There is a very high cliff, and this is its name, right? The Yishach Shefag Ramayim Kolomer Li Eilam Ein Mispalim. In other words, it means that we'll never pray for it because it's impossible for a person to be on the top of this high mountain, this
and
high cliff,
reaches.
And the water reaches. Okay. Omer Rabbi Bachona, the Didi Chazuli Keren Ophel. So Rabbi Bachona says, hey, wait a minute. I saw Keren Ophel. The Kamahu Tayo, and a certain Arab nomad, not Tayo, it's like a nomad, but it usually refers to Arabs. There's a certain Arab I saw who was Kirochiv Gamlo, he was riding on his camel, Benokin Rum Kobiyode, and he was holding his javelin in his hand, or his spear in his hand, and nevertheless, from where I was standing on the top of this Karen Ophel, says, Mischazi Iniba, looked only like a little worm. That's how high up, of course, the mountain is. Okay, so he's only saying, you know, I saw this place,
saw
it
down
it's
below the
good
mountain.
And high.
Yeah.
Like being on top of the Empire State Building or something like that, and looking down.
Yeah, they look like ants from
there. Yeah, they look like ants, exactly.
This is a worm.
Right. Yeah. Tana Rabbanan. All right. Torah says, V'nosati yishbechem b'yitam. Right? I will give your rains in their proper time. So he says, Lo yishechuro, one interpretation means, that the rains will be the itam, in other words, will be properly, right? So, lo shechur, the rains won't be like shikr, in other words, you know, soused, just, you know, drunk with too much water, right? Velo tzimeo, nor thirsty, right? Elo benonis, but rather, you know, somewhere in between. In other words, not too much and not too little, okay? Shekol zman shag shomim merubim, because when the rains are in multitude, in other words, you have too much rain, then metashtashin is horitz, then it destroys the ground itself. The yeno motzia peros, and it's not going to, you know, to bring forth, to give forth fruits or crops, okay? Dover acher, another interpretation. Be'ito means, in its proper time, it means Balelo Revios Vileli Shabbos. It means that it should rain Wednesday night, or maybe it means Tuesday night. I guess it really means Tuesday night. Well, it's Tuesday night going to
Wednesday.
Balelo Shabbos, because the next one, you know, says, and you know, the night of Shabbos, in other words, Friday nights. So that's why I think that Revios probably over here means Tuesday nights and Friday nights. Shekein motzinu b'yemei Shimon ben Shetach. By the way, this is the interpretation that if you take a look in the Rashi, to you know, where this pasuk occurs at the beginning of Bechukosai, you know, the last parsha in Sefer Vayikra. This is the interpretation. Is, you know, that the Nosati Yishbechem b'yitum. He says, but they reviews for the Shabbosos. Shekein motzinu, because we found that b'yemei Shimon ben Shetach, in the days of Shimon ben Shetach. Oh, yeah. Excuse me, before we go on, why does Rashi say over there, you know, why does he adopt it? He says, the reason over there that Rashi gives is that people, for some reason or other, don't go out very often on Tuesday nights. I guess that was the night to stay home. Maybe watch TV or something, I don't know. The Leilei Shabbos is obviously Friday night. It's a good time to stay home. Don't go to late services. Friday night.
Friday
stay
night,
home.
You have to
stay home and enjoy Shabbos.
No, you have to perform mitzvahs.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's
right.
What they call it now.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's a nice one. It's always a nice one. Why not?
Sure.
Yeah.
But particularly on Friday night.
The article here, it gives us a footnote.
Yeah.
It says, people generally do not venture out on these nights because of the demon Igras Bahas Makalas.
Well, the broad day, like right. You want to have demons. No, maybe.
Well, I'm just telling you.
Yeah, that. Okay. So, okay.
Rashi says this in Pesachim 112. For you.
Yeah, I'll tell you, take a look at the Rashi. He mentions it, you know. You think art school.
No.
I got it from Rashi.
He says it's from Rashi.
Yeah.
You should go to the Rebbe.
I swear I woke up, I was gasping for breath, and they were pushing me. Another time, she was in the side of the my
Okay, he says that on Tuesday nights, he says, the Revios, he says, from the Igras Bas Machlas. Gemara and Pesachim.
Yeah, Gemara and Pesachim.
All right, but look.
That's a reason, anyway.
Right. For whatever reason, okay. But as I say, for Friday night, certainly we don't have to worry about Shadim going out in the street over there.
Right.
After all the
Shadim are.
The reason is quite obvious. Shabbos at home.
Shabbos.
Yeah. All right. But anyway, the Gemara continues and says, Shakem and Shimim and Shimim and Shetach. We find that the days of Shimim and Shetach, Sheyodu Lehem Gishom Bili Reviers, Huli Shabboses, Achenasu, you know, rain fell Dafke on Tuesday nights and on Friday nights, and this happened. This was a bracha. Why? Because Achenasu Chitim Kikloyos, the wheat, the grains of wheat became as big as kidneys. Usa Orim, and the barley became Kikarine Zesim, as big as olive pits. Ba'adoshim, and the lentils became about the size of Kedinre Zohav, like gold dinarim, right? Vitzoru mehem dugmaladoros, and from this they were able to fashion an example for the generations to come. The hodia kamachet gorim, so to let us know how much sin has a bad effect upon us, how much we suffer as a result of sin. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, avonoseichem hitu eile, right? Your sins brought about these things, and your sins, your transgressions, they prevented good from coming to you. In other words, you suffered the loss of good because of your sins. So what is the business over there? So the answer is, the generation should know that, you know, when people didn't sin, and obviously in the days of Shimon ben Shetach, this was a very pious generation. So nature itself responded by rewarding people with, you know, this great abundance of food, right?
Wait. Shimon ben Shetach, wasn't that Hyrcanus? Hyrcanus was the Noah?
Who?
Shimon ben Shetach wasn't the Noah?
Hyrcanus. Yeah.
He was Noah. He's not a Noah.
No, he was. From the Hasmoneans, yes. Yeah.
He was?
From the Hasmoneans, sure.
But wasn't he the one that wanted to kill all the Parashim?
Yes. Yeah.
This is a
That's Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech, yeah.
But Shimon ben Shetach was also
right,
with Yanai.
There's an identification of Yanai with Yochanan and Hyrcanus, with John Hyrcanus. They both could have been good kings, but they weren't. I mean, we've had some bad Jewish kings too, you know. Yeah. All right. V'chein v'tzinu, and another example, we find v'imei Hordas, in the days of Herod, shehoye oskim v'binyam beis HaMikdash. When they were busy building beis HaMikdash, v'hoye yodim gishomim balayla. So the rain would come during the night, and l'mocho, but the following day, you know, when it was daytime again, so noshva ruach, or noshva ruach, the wind blew, and his pasru he'odim, and the clouds would scatter, v'zorcha achamo, and the sun would shine, the yotzon and lachton, and people would go out to do their work, the yodu, and they knew that shemelecha shemayim b'ilayim, that they were doing the work of heaven. In other words, they were engaged in the godly work in the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and this is why the rains would come at a time when they would not interfere with human beings, and also it's a sign of God's pleasure that the following day when they had to go back to work again, so they were able to work without interruption. So we see that for Nasati Gishmechem Yitam, you know, if the rain comes at the proper time, it is a bracha to us. And of course we know how much we ourselves are dependent upon rain. Granted that we like to have days which are nice and dry, but at the same time we also know that there are times when we need the rain. And of course in Eretz Yisrael, even more so than over here, because there's so little rainfall during the rest of the year that they were truly dependent upon the rain falling at the proper time. Okay, we shall stop at this point. All right, so next week in Yetz Hashem we'll meet again, and we'll have the very famous story of Choni Hama'agel.
Right now we're on Chav Gimel.
Chav Gimel, Ahmed Olive.
Ahmed Olive.
Right.
And it's November 16th, 1994.
Right. So we'll meet.
We are ready. Okay. Again.
Weiter.
Yes.
Weiter, is that what you said?
Weiter.
Lemma
Gain Weiter.
Lemma Gain Weiter. Right, okay. Let's move on.
We're on.
Weiter has different meanings, by the way. Weiter means again.
Oh,
yeah.
Like that.
And has another meaning.
Further.
Right.
Yeah,
further.
Right. Further. Right.
What does Weiter mean?
Weiter? Look at the Mishnah on your test for a moment. Okay, the Mishnah over there, if you go down to almost the break, you know, where it gets longer, if you remember, it says over there, Kol Tzara Shelo Tove, Alat Tzibur, right, for anything, you know, any Tzara that, God forbid, should ever happen, it means a Matzvin Elihim, right, then you have to pray for them. Chutz Meirov Gishomim, right, except if there is an abundance of rain.
Right.
All right. And last week in the Gemara, you know, we went over that and we saw, you know, that this is something that, why not? And so the basic reason is because the Rebbeinu Shalom sends you a favor, accept it graciously and, you know, don't try to object to the Rebbeinu Shalom, that he's giving you too much of a favor, okay? In other words, it's as though you were questioning the judgment of the Rebbeinu Shalom, okay? So then the Mishnah continues and it says, and I'll tell you a story now about somebody who had to pray because of the fact that what?
It got too much.
It was too much rain, right?
Right.
Okay, and what is the story? The story is about, right? Masa Shomun Leilchon HaMagel, right? That they set the Choni, the circle maker, literally. You know, his Paleel Sheyodu Gishomun, right? Pray that the rain should fall. Om Alehem, so he said to them, to Achnisut Hanur Pesachim, Bishril Shalei Mokum. Okay, so he said to them, to go and bring in the stoves that you've made in order to, you know, to roast the, to broil the Korban Pesach, because otherwise they're going to get, they'll melt away, in other words, Zilazar. So at that time we explained that the reason why, first of all, as we'll find out from tonight, when did this actually take place? So Gemara is going to say tonight that this happened towards the end of Adar when there was no rain. Okay, so we see already that the Gemara is expanding, if you wish, right upon what the Mishnah had to say in order to fill in missing gaps of the story, so to speak. Okay, but the business about the Tanurei Pesachim is not mentioned in the Gemara this time. Okay? In other words, that's the detail that the Mishnah mentions that's left out. But let's combine the two. It was towards the end of Adar, okay? And people had to get ready their ovens for Pesach, because after all, in the days that the Pesach Mikdash was in existence, then, you know, the principal observance of the Passover Seder was the fact that they would have a real Korban Pesach and eat it together with matzah morah, and then they would have the Haggadah in order to explain, you know, why they were celebrating Pesach. Okay? Yeah. So, the month of Adar had almost passed and still there was no rain. Okay? But Choni tells them, I'm going to pray for rain. And if I'm going to pray for rain, you better bring in, right, you better bring in those ovens that you prepared, which were made out of clay. Bring them inside so that they're not going to get soaked, because otherwise they're going to, you know, to dissolve or whatever. They'll crumble and so on, and then you'll be left with a pile of mud instead of a stove. Okay.
So, as I said, the Mishnah mentions about the Tanurim, the Gemara doesn't mention it. Okay. Gemara has different emphasis over there. Okay? All right. Now, the next part of the story is similar to what we have in the Gemara. Okay. So, let us continue the Gemara now. All right. Tanur Rabbanan. Okay? You see where we are?
Okay.
Three. Yeah, all right. Moses Shishokhul Lechon Yamagil. Right. The story tells, all right. Well, that was the Mishnah. You know, they always start with a quotation from the Mishnah before they begin the discussion in the Gemara. Okay? All right. So, Tanur Rabbanan. Tanur Rabbanan already tells us that this is either Baraisa or Tosefta, something like that. Okay? So, our sages have taught. Hamachas Yotzarov Ador. You see, here's where it's mentioned the date, which was not mentioned before over there. That almost all of Ador had passed, the Lo Yordu Gishomim, right? And the rain had not fallen. So Sholchu L'Choni Amagil, so the Chachomim, they sent to Choni Amagil, and they said to him, His Palil, the Yordu Gishomim, pray so that rain will fall. His Palil, the Lo Yordu Gishomim. He prayed, but rain did not fall. Og Ugo, so he made a circle, the Yomet B'Secho, and he stood in the middle of it. Kedar Shosu Chavaka Kanovi, even as Habakkuk Hanovi did in under similar circumstances, Shneimar, as the Pasuk says, Al Mishmarti Emoda, I will stand on my watch, V'Yisyatzu Al Matzor, and I will stand firm as if I were in a siege, and the rest of the Pasuk says over there, and I will wait to see, you know, what God will do. Okay? So the supposition over here is that apparently, in that particular incident, in the prophet Habakkuk, even though it doesn't mention that it's in connection with rain, but obviously the parallel would be that the basic reason why he did that is because he too was praying for rain. Okay? All right. Let's take a look at the Rashi for a moment, where it says, Kedero Shosu Habakkuk. Do you see that? All right. First of all, he explains the word Uga. Why does he have to explain the word Uga? Because what else can Uga mean in Hebrew?
Cake.
It can mean a cake, but it doesn't mean a cake. It means a circle. So Rashi explains that the word Uga. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Uga.
Uga. And Ugiya is a cookie.
Ugiya is a
cookie.
Ugiya is a cookie.
Little Uga, right.
Okay, exactly. Little
yeah.
Uga.
Yeah.
Where can you just point out?
Okay, you see it says on the side Chulin Kuf Yutes right on the top over there.
Oh, way up here. Oh,
right,
sorry.
You see it over there?
Got it. All right,
then
fine,
it says Daf Dalad, so well, that's
yeah,
some
yeah,
reference.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so it says okay. Ugo. It says Shura Agula, which means a round line,
right.
Okay, a round row or something like Kemo Ugo Shehi Agula. In other words, an Ugo like a circle which is round in shape. Okay. And then he says, Keder Shosa Habakkuk, just as Habakkuk did, Timefoish, Betargum shall fill his Habakkuk. This we derive from the Aramaic translation of the prayer of Habakkuk. Most of the prayer of Habakkuk is actually the third chapter in the book of Habakkuk. And these words occur like an introduction to it. So in the Targum, they explain that over there, what it was all about is Al Mishmarti Emoda. And, you know, I'm standing on my Mishmeret, on my watch. So he says, Kimin Beiswa Surim, Osa V'Yoshav. It's as if Habakkuk made himself a little prison and he sat in there. Now, of course, what is the connection between a prison, a self-made prison, and, you know, the answer is, we find, for example, this week, Yirtzeh Hashem, when we'll be reading the story about Joseph and his dreams, right? Mm-hmm. And we remember that, where did he wind up?
In jail.
He wound up in jail, right? And, you know, over there, so what is the term used for jail, right? So it says, based on, you know, based on Asurim and so on. But so b'mishmar beiswasur. This is exactly the quotation. Mishmar, right? Mishmar would be like the guardhouse of the prison. Okay, so that therefore it says al mishmar to you. So I stand in my own little prison. says Habakkuk, and I am waiting for God to give me an answer to
also,
my request.
The,
yeah.
I think what the word is somehow the word Mokesh, but the man that gathered the sticks on Shabbat.
Oh, Mokesh.
Mokesh, thank
right.
you.
Right, Mokesh ate some, yeah.
Okay, Mokesh.
Right.
They took him also and they put
yeah,
him
yeah,
in
the
Mishmar.
Yeah,
Mishmar,
right, and, then, right, and then they put him into the Mishmar, in other words. So they put him under God.
Right, under God, that's correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So the Mishmar was also the group of Kohanim that came to.
Okay, right.
All right. That came
correct,
to serve
correct.
The
I mean, we learned to write Mishmar, that, you sure. know. Eretz Yisrael was divided into 24 Mishmarot, right?
Yeah.
And each week there was a different Mishmar.
So that
exactly.
that work
yeah.
applied to
so that
Zorro.
They do literally guard duty, literally. Okay, in other words, they're there.
Beginning of Baruch.
Right.
Very beginning, when is the
yeah.
time for
yeah.
the
right.
prayer?
Right.
It's
Mishmar
also
the
time of the
morning
time
star.
Of the watch. Yeah, Ashmurah. Right.
Ashmurah.
Right. So Ashmurah is the time that, you know, gods have to stand duty. In other words, 4 hours, or according to another version, 3 hours. Okay? Mm-hmm. Correct. All right. So. Yeah,
okay,
getting back over here. So, with Habakkuk business, so this obviously served as a precedent for Choni, also what to do. And normal afod, and they said to him, meaning to the Rebbeinu Shalalem, Rebbeinu Shalalem, he said, your children have literally set their face upon me, in other words, they look upon me, they turn to me, right? Sha'ani kiven bayis lefanecha, because they know that I am like a ben bias. I'm like a member of your own personal family with you. Nishpa ani b'shimcha agodol. So I swear by your great name, she'eni zoz mikan, that I won't budge from here, ad shetrachem al bonecha, until you have mercy upon your children.
Going on strike.
Right. So yischil gesho menatim. So rain began dripping. Amrulei tamido. So his disciples said to him, Rebbe, he says, we look upon you, let us not die. In other words, please, this kind of rain will never satisfy us, right? We'll die from starvation with this kind of a rain. So, kimedumi monu, seems to us, she'engishavim yodim lahatishuascha, seems to us that this rain is only going. It's only coming down, it's only descending in order to release you from the vow. You made a vow that you're not going to budge from here until it rains. So the Rebbeinu Shalom sends a little drip of water upon you so that you no longer, you're released from your vow. So Amar, so he said, and naturally to whom? To the Rebbeinu Shalom. Okay? Mm-hmm. Probably the word Lefonov should be again in order to be, okay? So he said, "Lo kach shawalti." Look, Rebbeinu Shalom, this is not what I asked for, right?
The potential,
right? In the Bach, there's a somewhat longer reading over there. If you take a look on the bottom, do you have the Bach on your page? Towards the bottom over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I do.
All
yeah.
right, you take yeah. a look over there. You see the Aleph over there. It says, "Elalahatish wascha," right? They say that it seems to us that it's only in order to release it. So Omar the Fonov, so he said, you know, lo kach shawalti. In other words, Elo la abed ho elam. In other words, the world is going to be ruined. So Omar lahem lo somas. So never mind. He says, you're not going to die. And Omar the Fonov, and then he continued with his conversation. He says, don't worry. He says, you're not going to die, right? So this is what the Bach probably had a reading, you see. That,
sorry to stop you, who is the Bach?
Okay, the Bach is, let's see, well, who was he again? It wasn't Bachaye, I forget already who it was. At the moment you call, well, let's see.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Right.
I shouldn't bother
yeah.
you.
That's all right. Take a look for a moment.
Well, next week we're going to have an exam. We're going to ask you.
You're right. Next week.
I remember when I was. I'm just while we're looking. When I went to the Lubavitch Yeshiva, they have one right in the Cardo.
Yeah.
In 87, and when I walked in, they were giving the Talmidim. They're not too many, about less than 20. They were giving them an exam. I was so.
Listen, he quizzes all the time, you know.
Okay, the Bach was Rabbi Yoel Sirkish, who was Rav in Krakow. Yes, he was a very famous
Krakow.
Talmud Chacham, right, yeah, the city of Krakow. Okay, Yoel Sirkish was his name.
Yeah,
Yoel
Sirkish.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Krakow, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we answered who the
Bach is.
Okay. Right. But he has these little notes where, you know, he had either variant readings or he felt that the reading of the text was an error, and so therefore he corrected the text. There are others also who would occasionally, you know, like the... my mind isn't working too good tonight. No, that's okay. Thank you. I had a candy and that got lost. I'll have to buy more on the way home.
I have one ready.
You have something?
Yeah, I do. I hope you have one.
Thank you. From the side. All right. Yes, I'll tell you who I was thinking of. I was thinking of the Rashal of Shlomo Luria. He was another famous
commentator
upon the Gemara who particularly was interested in readings, variant readings, or making suggestions that the text was a little corrupt or whatever it may be. Okay? All right. So getting back over here. All right. So at any rate, he says, Lo kach shavalti, right? So he says to the Beinu Shalelam, wait a minute, this is not what I asked for. Elegishme boro shekhen me'oros. I want to have enough rain that it will fill the cisterns or the pits, right, the boros. The shekhen would be the ditches. And me'oros in the caves, you know, where water is stored. So, when the Beinu Shalelam heard that, yodu b'zav. So the rain came down in the buckets, literally in anger. Ad shekol tipo tipo. Until each individual drop, kimelo pi chovis, was the same size as the opening to a jug. In other words, that's how big the rain, each individual raindrop was. The shiru chachomim, and the chachomim estimated shein tipa pechuso milog, that no drop was less than a log, which, you know, it's a quite a substantial amount of liquid measure, right? In other words, it's a real heavy rainfall.
Chavit is a barrel?
Chavit, we use it in the sense of a barrel, but there could possibly simply be a jar.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a question. It does it mean that or not? Because in the Gemara, we find that certain words are sort of synonyms. So one place they called it chav, another place they called it a chavis.
Okay.
You understand?
All right.
So it would depend upon the particular locality as to what the particular item was called. Okay?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Amar lo talmidot. So his student said to him, Rabbi, he says, Rabbi, re'inucha v'leinomos, please, we see you, we don't want to die. Kibindumim nonu, shein gishom yodun l'abed ho'elon. It seems to me that the rain is coming down in order to destroy the world. This is why the rain is falling, you know, in such tremendous quantity. So he said to the Beinu Shalelam again, Lo kach shoalti. This is not what I asked for. Elo gishme ratzam bracho nedava. I want to have rain which represents your goodwill. That's what ratzon is. Bracha, rain that is a blessing. Unedava, that comes, you know, wholeheartedly from you. Yodu kisiknan, so the rain now came down the way it's supposed to come down, the right way. Ad she'olu kol ha'om lahar habayis b'nei yavshamim. Until everybody, of course it means over here, the people in Jerusalem, who were down in the lower part of the city, had to go up to the har habayis, you know, to the Temple Mount, b'nei yavshamim, because of the rain. Now, if you remember, in the Mishnah, they gave a specific location, which is not mentioned over here, but they called it even the Evan HaTohen or the Evan HaTohen, depending upon what. The Evan HaTohen would mean people, for example, lose an object, so therefore. Others say that, you know, people stray, so this would be, you know, like a place where they could find it. But anyway, it was high up on the Temple Mount, high enough, so that, you know, it means that the people then had to go up because there was so much water down below.
Flooding.
There was flooding. Omrulo, so they said to him, Rabbi,
Kishem shiz palalto sheyerdu kach is palel li'elchu lahem. So just as you pray that rain should fall, pray that the rain will go away. Om alahem. So he said to them, kach mikublani shem is palel rovedom. But he says, I have a tradition that we're not allowed to pray if we have too much of a good thing that Rabbeinu Shalom sends us. Afal pichein, nevertheless, okay, you asked, I'll do what I can, right? So he says to them, Hoviuli par hodah, bring me an ox. Now, hodah has, again, it has double meaning. One meaning, the word hodah, we know, is like the word todah, it means thank you, thanksgiving, right? But according to Rashi here, it doesn't mean that, because the word hodah in Hebrew also has another meaning. It means to confess, like we have the word vidui, or the hiswados, mm-hmm. and so on. So this is what Choni says, bring me an ox upon which I can confess our sins, and you know, then I will be able to pray. So heviulo parhodah, right, so they brought it to him. And he placed his two hands upon it. This is what we call smicha, which means that whenever they would bring a sacrifice, the Beis HaMikdash, it's written in the Torah, Samach Yodu al Rosh HaPor, for example, or Samach Yodu al Rosh HaAyol, and so on and so forth. Meaning, usually, it's the Kohen. But any individual who brings a gift to the Beis HaMikdash, you know, an animal to be sacrificed, so he would put his hands upon it, because smicha is kshera bizar. In other words, putting your hands on the animal, this is kosher even if it is someone who is a non-priest, non-Kohen. Okay? So, he put his hands upon this ox, V'yomar leponov, and he said to Rabbeinu Shalom, Rabbeinu Shalom, he says, Amcha Yisrael shoyitzeisam mitzvayim, your people Israel, whom you brought out of Egypt, he says they cannot take either too much of a good thing or too little, or too much of a bad thing. Okay? Koasta lehem, if you become angry with them, einon yichon lamot, they can't take it. Hishpato lehem tovo, if you gave them too much of a blessing, einon yichon lamot, they also can't take it. Be your will, that the rain should stop, and that the world should have, release, or should have, you know, things should be right again with the world. So miyad, immediately, the wind blew, and the clouds scattered, and the sun shone, and the people went out to the field, and they brought back from the field all kinds of mushrooms. Kameyan and pitrios are different types of mushrooms.
Yeah, because of all the rain, the wet.
Right, the wetness, exactly. Sholach lo Shimon ben Shetach. So Shimon ben Shetach, of course, heard about all this. He was the head of the Sanhedrin in his day. And he says, if you weren't choni, he says, I would put you into excommunication. I would excommunicate you. Why? She'ilu shonim kishnei Eliyahu. Because, let's take, for example, the years that, even if the year now, the drought would be as bad as it was in the days of Elijah the prophet. Remember, in the days of Elijah, there was a drought for 3 years, right? Until finally Elijah went up on Mount Carmel and he prayed that the rain, should come to an end, okay? And the key to the rain were in the hand of Elijah. In other words, he was the only one who had the power to bring rain. We would not find that God's name would be profaned through you. In other words, you deserve excommunication for the simple reason that you had no business, telling God, you don't like the rain, this is too much, this is too little, and so on and so forth. You know, you deserve to be excommunicated because you are actually engaged in the Chilul Hashem. This is what he says. But
Avol ma'aselok, what can I do to you? She'atom is chate lifnei amokim, because you behave like a naughty boy before the Rebbeinu Shalom. And nevertheless, he does exactly what you ask. Just as for the case of a son who behaves and misbehaves in the presence of his father, and yet the father gives in to him, he gives him what he asks for. Right? So it says to him, Father, take me, bathe me in warm water, rinse me with cold water, or ten li egozim, give me nuts, shekedim, almonds, safarskim, peaches, rimonim, pomegranates. Right? In other words, every minute he's asking his father, do this, do that for me, and so on and so forth. Right? He wants his father to do everything for him. Okay? And he's always asking for something. But no sin lo. And his father gives him. So in other words, your relationship with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is like that of a child who misbehaves, and yet the father indulges him and he gives in to him at all times, whatever he asks for. Yolecha akosav leomer. And concerning you, the Pasuk says, Yismach avicha v'yemecha, may your father and mother be happy, v'sogel yolada techa, and may she who gave birth to you rejoice. In other words, you're blessed, you're like Rebbeinu Shel Olam's favorite child. Okay? Tanu Rabbanan. Another thing. Ma sholchu b'nei lishkas ha'gos l'chanei magi. What did the people who were in the Lishkas HaGozis, that would be the chamber of paved stone, this is where the Sanhedrin actually had its headquarters in the Beis HaMikdash. So what message did they send to Chunei HaMagal? They said to him, and they quoted now Sukkim from the book of Job, Vatigzar Omer, that you have the power to make a request, to say something, V'yokimlo, and it is fulfilled. Whatever you ask for, you get. And over all your paths, light shines. In other words, you are successful in whatever you do. But things are Omer, right? And then they expounded upon the pasuk. Ato gezate mumato, you made a decree down here on earth. Hakadosh Baruch Hu mekayim amorchem numala, and Rebbeinu Shel Olam fulfills what you ask for in heaven or from heaven. The Aldro Chechad Nogaor, and how about the next part of the pasuk which says, and light shines on your path? It says, Dor, the generation, Shehoya Ophel, which was in darkness, Heyarta Bitfilatzcha, you brought light through your prayers. And then the pasuk continues over there, and Eovan says, Ki Shpilo Vatomegova, when people are low, you say, you can be raised, which means Doshoya Shofil, the generation which was lowly, Higbatobit Filascha, you are able to raise through your prayers. The Shachidayim Yoshia, and the one who is lowly in eyes, in other words, who is humble, who looks humbly, Yoshia, will be saved. Doshoshach Ba'abono, the generation that was humbled in its sin, Oshatobit Filascha, you are able to say through your prayers. Yimolet Inoki, the one who is not innocent was saved. And again, they apply that to Dor Shelo Hayadoki, the generation which was not innocent, because in other words, it had sinned. Nevertheless, even though it was a sinful generation, Milata Tobit Filosofa, you are able to say through your prayers. The Nimnat Babor, and the one who was concealed in the pit, right? Kapecho milateto, your hands saved him. The Masi Adecha Habrurin, through your pure deeds. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, now we come to another very famous story concerning Chunei HaMagal. Okay?
The end of Chunei's life.
Huh?
It says the end of his life.
Yeah, we'll see. Leipnisht.
I don't want to see the
book. Only telling
he's
you
such
that
an
this
interesting
is a
guy.
Famous
I don't,
story.
I don't want to
coming to another famous story. All right. So now we know why it's called Chodei Magel, because of the circle that was able to bring rain. But now we have another story. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, "Called Yom Shalos Tzadik." As long as that great tzaddik lived, Hayim and Storam Mikrozeh, he was troubled. Literally, he was saddened, but it means he was troubled by this pasuk. Which pasuk? One that we all know, Shir HaMa'alos, right?
Yes.
A song of ascent, whatever it means. The different meanings has to be right. Hashem Shiva Sion, Ho Yenukal Cholmin. When God returned the captivity of Zion, we were like dreamers. So what's the problem? So he says, Omar, he said, Ni'iko denayim shivin shona b'chalmo. Is it possible that a person could slumber for 70 years and dream? Right? Because it says, after all, how long was Golas Babel? How long was the Babylonian captivity?
Let's see, when we count this, there's 17 years from the first king, and then there's 34 years?
Well, okay. I'll cut it short.
Right.
According to Yirmiyahu, he said that it's going to be 70 years.
70 years.
All right. But, of course, how do they derive 70 years?
Right.
The answer is that they start the count in the time when Yerushalayim was first besieged by the Babylonians, and at that time, if you remember, King Yehoyachin was taken into captivity.
Right.
And to many people, the person whom he then placed upon the throne of Israel, throne of Judah to be more exact, okay, namely Tzidkiyahu, who was the last king, many people consider him sort of like, I would say, like a quisling or a usurper or something like that. Anyway, they didn't consider him the genuine king. The genuine king was the one who was taken captive and put into a Babylonian prison.
Right.
Okay? So, and also at that time, together with Yehoyachin, when the captivity took place then, there were already at least 50,000 of the elite of Yerushalayim among Kohanim, as for example Yechezkel HaNovi, and some of the most skilled artisans and so on, you know, who were also taken as captives to Babylonia, and there, you know, they settled in Babylonia. Eventually they formed the vanguard of a Jewish settlement over there in Babylonia. Okay, so if you count from that, and then you go to the time that Persia finally conquered, Eretz Israel, they conquered Babylonia and gave permission to the Jews to come back to Eretz Israel. So it comes to pretty close to 70 years.
How many years was it between